So welcome everyone. Is there anybody, this is our first time here? Good. So again, this is the Florida Community Mindfulness, as most of you know, and this is our new Mindfulness Practice Center, which is a work in progress. But we are quite happy that we have moved from the downstairs into our meditation hall, and even though there is still work to do, it is wonderful that we can be here. Often the format is I begin by taking questions and answers, but today I'll do it reverse, give the talk first and then have time for question and answers. For those who've been here before, you may wonder who these people are in their brown robes. And that very simply is in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, there is an order called the Order of Interbeing that was founded by Thich Nhat Hanh in Vietnam in the 60s, and is an order of people, lay people like us, and monks and nuns who really want to more fully commit themselves to leading an awakened life and being of service. And one of the ways that our community of Order Into Being members is of service is they support us. And this weekend we had a retreat here for members of the Order of Into Being. There are about 32, I think, within our community, both ones who have been fully ordained and then received the jacket and those who are aspirants. So I welcome all of them. Especially the ones from out of town. And just before we end, we'll get just a brief report on what they've been up to, topics they've been dealt with this weekend. But because we call the Order of Into Being a community, and because we have the name Community, Florida Community of Mindfulness, in our title, I thought maybe I could speak today about a community. Because I think that is an incredibly important concept, but even more important, it's something that is very much alive to us and is really central to our mission within our own Florida Community of Mindfulness. My thought is right now to begin. If there is not community, what is there? And I think what you have is very much what we have in our society, which is we have individuals. And I think we are in a sort of unusual time period in the evolution of human beings. Or the devolution of human beings, depending on your perspective, that I think individual human beings have never found themselves so alone. I think since endless time, human beings have been part of larger communities which could be of clan, of tribe, of extended family, of large families. But we know that really is not the case anymore. Families are much smaller. Many people don't have families or live alone. More and more, the unit, at least in terms of family, is nuclear. Two people, and maybe a child or two. But we know from demographics that's not often the case anymore. And often people who have extended family, they don't live upstairs and around the block the way they used to. As well as beside the lack of extended family, we no longer live in neighborhoods our whole life, so we don't have neighbors that we are part of our community. We are endlessly changing our jobs every 3, 4, 5 years. Most Americans, so we don't have those ongoing community of colleagues, as well as, you know, we in our own society, it's fairly divisive. So I think there is intrinsically a lot of loneliness in our current world. That goes very fast. People are very busy. And when people's busyness stops, and they may begin to feel that emptiness or loneliness, our consumer culture has given us many things to do, many things to consume, many things to stimulate ourselves with all various kinds of electronic inventions, internet, etc., as a way to feel kind of connected to something. But I think these do not provide real connection. I think many people, individuals, look for connection in romantic love. And we know that is central for people in our society, to find that partner. It is a process that many people find difficult and has many ups and downs. But even when one is quote-unquote successful and finds that romantic partner, and finds a connection, an intimate connection with another human being, we know that often is not necessarily the solution. That there are still problems, even in there are even when we find those types of relationships, and there's an instability in them. So that's. So that's sort of the condition, I think, very simply, that, you know, and obviously sociologists, psychologists, social psychologists, anthropologists have a lot more to say about these things than I do. But I think there is certainly truth in that. Yet at the same time, I think at a very profound and deep level, we want interconnection. We want closeness. And we want to feel part of something bigger than our little self. Let me just talk about spiritual community, putting ourselves somewhat in that grouping. I think there are kind of two kinds of spiritual communities, and maybe there are two kinds of people who are looking. I think one way you might say is kind of a network. It's sort of like a spiritual community where people are coming together kind of to kind of network with other people who have somewhat like-minded needs or wants or views, and you know, and that's kind of it. And that kind of meets a need of many people to find some like-minded people. And that's nice, isn't it? But I think a true spiritual community goes a lot deeper and offers a lot more. And again, I acknowledge that not everybody is looking for that type of community. You know, in the Buddhist tradition, in terms of kind of the fundamentals of what makes up a Buddhist community, we say there is Buddha, there is Dharma, and there is Sangha. Buddha has many different meanings, but Buddha means whether it's the historical Buddha who founded our tradition, or all the Buddhas and all the teachers to our current day. So there is the presence of enlightened teachers. To inspire, to guide, to mentor. Then there is Dharma, teachings and practices that help us really understand how to understand and how to love, how to awaken, how to heal and nourish ourselves and transform ourselves. So we need a body of teachings and practices. And finally, there is what's called in Buddhism Sangha. There is a community. And Sangha can be seen narrowly as Sangha are the people who practice the Buddha, the Dharma. You know, practice the Dharma, that's the Sangha. But again, I think that defines it more as that kind of network. Thich Nhat Hanh, who I think most of you know, and certainly is a father, grandfather of our community here, really elevated Sangha. And you know, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Sangha comes third and I think it's usually considered. Essentially, you need Buddha. You need the enlightened teachings. You need the teacher. You need the Dharma. You need the practices. And then it's, then the Sangha just comes third. Thich Nhat Hanh has done an interesting thing. He's elevated Sangha. Because he says, without community, without fellow practitioners, our capacity in this modern age to resist the forces of materialism, to resist the pressures of our modern life and the stresses of our lot in life, to resist the messages, the empty messages, to endlessly consume and pursue. He said, "We need a community. We need to be part of something that can help us not only resist so much of the." And you know, I call a lot of our modern culture, to me, a lot of it is like junk food. You know, like junk food, it kind of looks like food, and when it goes down, it is packaged in an incredibly skillful way to make us feel like it's delicious. And I actually recently read an article where actually the purveyors of modern food are very sophisticated in their knowing the addictive qualities that foods have to people, so they keep consuming. So even though junk food looks like food, tastes like food, and we have this strong yearning to have more of it, it is essentially what? It is nutritionless. It doesn't really provide us with the nutriments that we need from real food, right? So in the same way, I think much of what our culture offers us is junk. Looks good, pretty, it sounds good. When we do it for the moment, it feels good. But afterwards, we are not left truly fulfilled. The emptiness returns. Not only do we need a community and a body of teachings and practice that help us resist and really understand what's going on in the popular culture and the real force it has, the real grip it has on us and everybody we know, but more than that, a spiritual community is a community that nurtures a whole different set of values in life. I found some teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh's related to the community. He says here, a sangha, which is a Buddhist community, is a community of resistance, resisting the speed, violence, and unwholesome ways of living that are prevalent in our society. Mindfulness is to protect ourselves and others. A good sangha leads us in the direction of harmony and awareness. The substance of the practice is most important. The forms can be adopted. So a spiritual community is a community that is made up of human beings, much like ourselves, who are coming together to nurture and support each other in developing the capacity to live, how? How would you say? To live really loving, caring lives, where we learn how to connect and communicate and dialogue and understand each other in very deep and meaningful ways, where we can be ourselves. Many of us in our society, we cannot be ourselves. We have to almost like be somebody else. And many of our relationships, our work relationships, our collegial relationships, and even our personal relationships are based on us presenting ourselves not as we really are, and not really being able to express what we really feel and who we really are. A spiritual community is a place, hopefully, where we can truly be ourselves. We don't have to hide, we don't have to pretend, we don't have to put on a face, right? Because we know that we are among people who want to live authentically and want to nurture that capacity in each of us to heal and transform so we can be truly happy human beings. So a community is more than a bunch of people who sit next to each other and listen to a Dharma talk. They're more than people who sit next to each other in meditation. It's more than people who just walk in front or behind each other in walking meditation, right? Even though those things are all good, and everybody is welcome to participate in those. It's more than the forms, it's more than the activity. Right, you know, it's sort of like the difference between dating somebody and entering into a committed relationship. Everybody knows the difference? Yeah, there's a difference. And the difference also has risks, but it has great rewards. Because we know that if we always are just going around dating people and having very kind of friendships, but fairly superficial, and there's no commitment, and you know, we're only here for the good times, that those relationships do not last very long. So community is really about wanting that kind of commitment, because one knows it's not like commitment out of fear, it's not commitment out of orthodoxy, it's not commitment out of dogma, it's not commitment because if you don't commit, you're going to go to hell. You know, it's not that kind of commitment. It's like a commitment where you enter into a relationship because you know that it's only by committing to it that one will really receive the benefits of it. Really grow, really learn. And know that when I commit to you, you are committing to me. Thich Nhat Hanh has a wonderful calligraphy which says, a profound teaching. I actually have it at home, I should bring it in. It says, I am here for you. Many people who've studied a lot of Buddhism, studied a lot of sutras, been to a lot of Dharma talks, have never heard that teaching. That is a profound Dharma teaching, Buddhist teaching. I am here for you. You know, we're in our community, we are in the process over these 6 months in looking deeply into the whole area of selflessness and selfishness, and the whole role that I, me, mine, and ego plays in all that. We have intensives, we have retreats, we have talks, but this is sort of our 6 month looking deeply. I am here for you is a teaching about non-self. Because when one lives in the world of self, the calligraphy would be either I am here for me, right? Which is where a lot of us, or a lot of people live, right? It's just about me. Even in American society, we have ideologies which says that's good for society if everybody's just about them. I am here for me. And then the other variant on that would be, next to that would be the calligraphy of you are here for me too. So those are the two primary teachings of egoism, we could say, right? That basically this life is about me getting whatever I can, taking care of my needs and wants, making sure that I am happy, right? So that's number one. And number two, if I happen to be in relationship with you, I want to inform you that that's your job too. You're here primarily to meet my needs, to make sure that you're always doing things that make me happy. But I am here for you is very different, isn't it? I am here for you is a wonderful expression of love. When we truly love someone, we rise out of that egocentricity and we naturally want the other person to be happy. We want them to be safe. And oftentimes when we make our decisions, see, when we're dating somebody, if I want to do this on this day or do that on this day or go on vacation, I don't need to tell them, do they? Right? Because I'm free to make my own decisions and choices, because I'm here for who? Me. Right? But when you're in a committed relationship, a loving relationship with somebody, before you think of doing something, you do what? What? You check in with them. You check in with them. Yeah. Because it's not just about me. It's about you too. In the same way, when we are in our selfish mode, in the I, me, my mode, again, my concern is the ending of my suffering and the increase of my happiness. When I'm in the mode of I am here for you, it also means what? That a lot of my choices and decisions are made about, is this supportive of you? Is this supportive of your happiness? Is this supportive of your well-being? And when you are suffering, when you're in pain, when you're going through difficulty, I am here for you. Right? That's called what? Love. And whether we begin with just learning to turn that type of love to this body-mind, many people can't even be there for their own body-mind. They engage in all kinds of what we call toxic, self-destructive, dysfunctional kind of activities that produce affliction in their own body-mind. So even that I am here for you doesn't even extend to their body-mind. But let's say we've gotten that one. And we see our own body-mind as objects of our loving-kindness and our compassion. And I am here for you. Then we extend it out to others. Community means we are taking that capacity and beginning to really commit to other human beings and seeing that their well-being and their nourishment and their happiness and the alleviation of their suffering is my concern too, as much as my own. So being in a true spiritual community is a community where people are here for each other. To be here for another human being, you have to what? You have to know them. I remember years ago I was invited to give a weekend retreat to a group of Dharma practitioners, strong meditators who've been practicing together for years. So again, these people invited me to conduct a weekend meditation retreat. And again, they had been practicing together for many years together. And because in our tradition, even on retreats, we kind of at some point sit in a group and kind of talk about what one's experiencing in the retreat, I did that. And I could tell when I did that with this group, they were very uncomfortable. When I asked them, so share with us, what has been your meditative experience? What are you going through this past 24 hours? You know, not only silence, but I could tell uncomfortableness. And I found out later that even though these people had been sitting together for years on a weekly basis, did not know each other. And never talked about, I mean, even though they came together around meditative practice, they never talked to each other about what they were experiencing. So this is a network, but this is not a community. Right? In a community, we want to know each other. We want to know what we're experiencing. And we're open to that. And that type of... Again, whether we call it community, whether we call it family, it has those same qualities. But in a spiritual community, because it has, like we say, a different intention than a family, our intention is more than just creating a safe, nourishing, wholesome, loving, caring environment for the participants. We have two other very significant goals or mission in our community, in a real spiritual community. One is personal transformation. And again, we may have good families, loving partners and friends, but we may not have many people who really understand this desire, this yearning we have for healing and transformation, and therefore really offer and support that. And again, not because they're people, they're probably better people than us, they might not even need it. That is a unique piece of a spiritual community. There is something going on at the core which has to do with teaching and practice and guidance for personal spiritual awakening. Because we can even be in a supportive, loving, caring environment, nourishing environment, and there can still be a lot of ego garbage being tossed around, thrown around, projected. And that can often manifest in conflicts, disappointments, and hurt feelings, and all that stuff that even arises, even like in loving relationships. We take ourselves too seriously. We take our views as too important. Or we have grandiosity or we have inferiority. Andy talked about the three complexes of self. A spiritual community also is not just a good, loving community, but also a community that has a strong commitment to personal awakening and transformation and has an ongoing program that facilitates that for its members. And I would say the last piece of a spiritual community is that it at the same time is we could, the way I see it is just as an individual, you know, we are one individual, let's say, in a world of 6 billion people. And in a certain way, even though many of us have all kinds of ideas and aspirations for a peaceful world, for a harmonious world, for a sustainable world, for a nonviolent world, you know, many of us have very good values in that way and good aspirations for the world. The first thing of this 6 billion people, if we want to transform the world, the one thing that does not have to wait for everyone else is our willingness and commitment to become at least one person in this world of 6 billion people who is at peace, who lives at peace, who lives in harmony, who lives lovingly and openly and nonviolently and compassionately and cares about their fellow human being. I mean, each of us can be that one person who does that. If we still have anger, if we still have judgment, if we still have grandiosity and think that we're only right, if we do still have intolerance, we are not peaceful people. And we are really not the basis for a better world. We are just a reflection of the world. Right? If we are as intolerant of the people who are intolerant, if we are just as rigid as the people we accuse of rigidity, if we are just as dogmatic as the people we accuse of dogmatism, then the world is not going to change. So each individual as one cell, one person within the human body, can become healthy. That's our first commitment, to be a healthy cell in the human body. But then the next step to me in community is that, you know, this community of 100 or 200 or 300 people becomes a larger, healthy cell. That the way we live, the way we relate, is an expression of all the values that we hold. They're not just values that we hold. They're not just catechism that we repeat. They are something that we live. Much easier to talk about and complain about others than to actually live it. So not only are we individuals, but we are a community. So we are a community. As Thay says, Thich Nhat Hanh says, we are a community that lives in harmony and awareness. Because we would love, right? We would love to live in a world of harmony and awareness. But we cannot wait, can we? We cannot wait for Congress, can we? For our politicians to create a world of harmony and awareness. They don't have a clue about that. We can't expect our state legislators, our county commissioners, because most of them don't have a clue about that. So it is up to us. And rather than waiting and complaining and being frustrated or embittered or hopeless or all those places that people go, we need to do it. And one of the ways we can do it, beside our own personal transformation, is join with other people to create a community that shows, that demonstrates that it is possible. Right? Possible. And again, the great advantage of people like us, in other words, we are lay people. We live in the community, we have jobs, we have families, we have homes, we pay rent, we have mortgages, right? We do all that. You know, we're not monks and nuns living in a cooperative communal monastery supported by others. We don't live in the mountains. We're not hermits, right? So we can demonstrate that it is possible for human beings who look like normal human beings, who are normal human beings, who live lives of normal human beings, can create both within themselves and within their community a nourishing, harmonious community where spiritual values are not only talked about, but they are lived, and most importantly, they are actualized. That is an important step. It is different than signing a petition. It is different than standing with a placard. It is different than arguing with people. But I think in the long run, it is the most meaningful. Because it's solid. It's real. And it's about the human being. Because this world will only become the world we want it to be when human beings become the way, that way. It cannot be legislated. It cannot be imposed. It cannot be enforced. It can only be learned by living it. And so if we want a peaceful, nonviolent world where human beings take care of one another, where human beings take care of the earth, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, he wrote in a letter, he said, he said, the earth is suffering, right? The earth is suffering. And why aren't human beings able to take care of their suffering planet? Because they can't even take care of their own individual suffering. They don't know how to stop their own suffering. They don't stop long enough to really acknowledge their suffering and do the work that's needed to transform it, to heal it. So how could they possibly, have the capacity and the will to heal their planet? That has been so wounded, so damaged. And there's the capacity of no longer even supporting life if we don't change. So again, in a spiritual community, we are learning how to stop and to recognize suffering and to transform it. But as I say, the third mission to me of a spiritual community is that it has the larger vision of the society. And once it really has established itself as a harmonious and aware community, and really has that to some degree of depth in that, and solidity in that, and experience with that, then that community can join with other types of communities. Communities that share a common vision, even though they may be nothing to do with Buddhism or i.e. spirituality, but similar kinds of people who share similar kinds of visions. We join with them. Right? As well as we can undertake activities to create bridges to the broader community, to introduce people to teachings and practices which do facilitate healing and transformation, which do help people learn how to stop. I mean, yesterday somebody in our retreat says they were talking about all the people they work with, and he said, all of them, to one degree or another, are caught up in their emotional afflictions. And yet they don't have a clue how to stop and to look deeply. Not a clue. So that's where they need to be helped. Just learning to stop. Just learning to develop the capacity of self-awareness. To be able to look, you know, what is the cause of these afflictions? Rather than seeing the cause of the afflictions all being outside ourselves, we see, and that can only come by helping people learn how to do that. So there are many ways that a spiritual community has gifts that it can bring into the broader world to help in its healing and transformation. And that should be our goal. We have a few minutes, and then we have a little report from the Order of Interbeing people about their weekend retreat. But I'm open to questions. Again, I am sharing with you my own personal vision for a spiritual community, and I think the vision of many of our members. But again, I'm wondering if anybody has any questions or comments. Please feel free to speak from your heart, speak your mind. Don't just feel like you just got to take it in. I mean, what do you think? You think it's doable? You think it's not doable? You think it sounds great? What's for lunch? I mean, what? What's next on my Sunday agenda? I mean, you know. Yes, Kate. So just for the recording, Katie was just sharing her own journey as a meditator and learning to sit with other people and joining a community and how that has nourished her and in many ways. But I think what important is you're saying is being in a community and getting the support and nourishment of the community and your own personal transformation has then supported you in wanting to continue on in the broader community to be of help, to be of support, to find ways, creative ways to benefit others. And I think that's good. I mean, that's what we should be doing. I mean, we should not, a good community, you know, it has that inwardness. We have to go in to do our own healing and transformation, but then it goes out. And it is creative. It is creative. It creates creative energy. It should free us. It shouldn't constrict us. A lot of religious communities, because they're very dogmatic and there's only very few ways, the creative expression is very narrow. Right? But we want it to be very free. Because we want to create a place where people can be themselves. And when people are truly come home and be themselves, then their creative expression will be very unique to themselves. It doesn't have to fit into a mold. It doesn't have to be a certain way, and that's very important. That we learn to nourish each other, but nourish each other as individuals, not as clones. A good spiritual community is not producing clones. If you're looking for clones, you see them selling flowers at the airport. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? There are certain communities produce clones. We don't want to produce clones. We want to produce live people. Other questions or comments? Don't be shy. Yes. Can everybody hear Claudia? So Claudia's talking about, you know, a real issue, where she says she really would love to be who she believes she is. But yet, the kind of job she has a lot of interaction with people where she has to kind of play a role and can't really express herself totally. And she's afraid that that's kind of carried over into other areas of her life where kind of being authentically herself and connecting people in that way is difficult. Yeah, so that's the issue. And again, I think that's the issue we're talking about here. The teachings and the practices and the way of living that we're learning in our spiritual community should help us transform that. So you're absolutely right that if you're involved with a spiritual community, you should say very clearly, if this is working for me, this is where it's working. And I think that's good. I mean, I think, you know, we can't be too airy-fairy about our spirituality. You know, it's not all about peace and love and goodness, and, you know, it's got to be real. And it's got to be real about the things that we're grappling with in our life. So in your community and in your spiritual practice, your mindfulness, your meditative practice, your loving kindness practice, that you're learning to nurture and support authenticity. So at least, at the very least, you know who you are. Okay, that's important. Many people don't even know who they are. They haven't stopped long enough or been willing to just, you know, go take off the mask, take off the roles, take off the conditioning, and really touch deeply who I am. So that's, your spiritual community and practice should help you do that and support that. So that's number one. And that's very important. You know, before we take it into the world, who am I really to authentically take in the world? Many of us don't know that, and that takes time to know that. So then that's that. And now Claudia, let's say in her more personal life, where she maybe has more control than at work, where she's, she's got a job description. She's, you know what I'm saying, where, you know, which is, again, hopefully at home and other relationships, the job description is not that tight, you know. but it is roles. And again, on one side you might say risky, but I would say liberating. To begin to, once you really know who you are, to be willing to step out of the conditioned way you've always been, but also knowing that the conditioned way people see you and therefore are with you. I mean, it's relationships are all interactive. But I think that's great. It may stir things up a little bit. It may stir things up a lot. I think it's important, the presentation is important. You know, I think as we are going through our process of knowing ourselves better and transforming, I think it's not good to kind of beat people over the head with it or to be elitist or something or judgmental. You know, look how I'm changing, you're still stuck where, you know what I mean? I mean, so we have to be very careful in how we present it. And I think it's also good to let those people that we've been involved with know what we're doing. You know, like a little disclosure statement. You know, just want to let you know that I'm going through this period of self-discovery, and I'm not sure where it's going, and I may kind of act in ways that haven't traditionally been doing. I just want to give you a little warning. And you may tell your friends and loved ones and family to be patient with Claudia, right? Because she's a work in progress. Okay, and so again, I think it's important to frame that to the people you're involved, so they don't take it the wrong way or they don't feel threatened, you know, and these kinds of things. So again, I think communication around your own personal transformation and changing with those you are close to, one kind of minimizes the negative reaction, but also kind of frees you to kind of be yourself. Because you've let them know that. Again, at work, you know, work is a conundrum, and many people have work that is very constricting and very deadening. You know, they don't want you to be yourself. They want you to be a robot. They want you to just put on an act. You know, they want, it depends, again, you know, where you are in your profession, choice of job, where you are, you know, whether you got to stay there or not, are all very personal choices. If you have to be an actress at work, be a good actress. You know? Don't just say your lines, but enjoy them. Enjoy your lines. Enjoy your role. Right? And find little ways to connect. You know? I think the problem that you talk about is in that kind of role-playing, robotic kind of thing where it just becomes dramatic, is that we lose that sense of connection. We don't realize that whether it's, is it face-to-face or is it on the phone or... I understand, but again, I would say, so he says, but again, you know, to do the role, to do the job, you have to create this image, it's not really who I am. Yeah, you got to be careful that you don't create something that then you're stuck with and becomes an albatross. Now, I understand. Yeah, and you want to get out of that one. You want to, you know, feel the creativity of what you're doing. And the way you do that is not see it as a role, but get into the part. You know, if you ever, I mean, to me, the difference between a really great actor or actress and a not great one is a great actor, actress, you really believe they are that person. You know? When you still aren't convinced of it, there's a little artificiality, or they're trying too hard, you know, or there's, you know, I mean, we deal with that all the time, public relations people and all that. You know, there's something about the way they greet you, and there's something the way they say, oh, I'm so sorry, that's, you know, it's, you know, I mean, I'll go into stores and I know these people have been trained well, right? Because they're saying it all right. God knows what they're really thinking about you, but they're, you know, and you can sense that. And I think you can sense that when someone has been well-trained in customer relations and when somebody really means it. You know, and that's what you want to capture. You want to, if your job is customer relations, is that your job or something? Whatever, let's just say it is, something like that. It means that, yeah, that every day when you go to work, yeah, you really want to help people. You want to benefit people. And when they have problems, you want to see what you can do to solve it. And when they're having problems, yeah, it is, you know, you're not happy about it. You really want to help them. See, you become human. You see, you let your personality enter the job. Now, again, you know, you can't say everything you want. You know what I mean? There are prescriptions around your job description. But you want to be, you know, you want to bring as much as your authenticity in it. And when you find that you feel like, you know, you get to work and you're just putting on a mask, and then when it's 5 o'clock you're taking the mask off and becoming Claudia, you know things aren't good. Right? You know things aren't good. Yeah. You know, you may have to put on a little face paint or something at your job, but you don't want to put on a mask. Right? And again, I don't think you have to. Because, you know, one of the qualities of our practice is to bring freshness, to be fresh. And it's often hard when you have a job that's somewhat consistent in what you're doing every day to maintain that freshness and not to have it become kind of robotic or automatic. And I think you get away from that by your capacity to really live in the moment, to come there every day, be fresh. Every experience is a new experience. Every person, you haven't seen him before. It's a fresh experience. And, you know, and there may be, even within the constraints of your job and how what you're doing, there may be ways to connect with people, to see. Because remember, they're doing the same thing you're doing. Right? I mean, most of the people they're playing their role too, right? So, it could very well be, if you connect back with your own authenticity, you're able to touch it in them. It doesn't have to be that other way. Is that clear? So again, it's very important. You know, it's like we said earlier. Society, unfortunately, is set up in a way to dehumanize us. Because the energy of systems is all about what? Productivity, getting the job done, making profit. You know what I mean? It's the goals are all material. Right? The goals of most jobs are not well-being, happiness, authenticity of presence. Right? Those are things we talk about here. But in the quote-unquote work world, unfortunately, those aren't things that are cultivated. So that's why it's important that you remember that that's what you're cultivating, no matter what you are. Brian's a skycap at the airport. You may run into him, right? Spends his day wheeling people around, right? And yet, We've talked often about how to turn that into service, how to turn that into I'm helping each of these people. You know, so there's some heart in it, and as I'm wheeling them around, there's a way to connect with them. I don't just have to do it like I'm just an extension of the wheelchair. Is that so? It's important because many of us, as lay people, we spend a great part of our life at work. Right? We spend probably more time at work than we do with things that we may find, quote unquote, more meaningful or give us greater happiness. So it's very important that we no longer see work as just something, you know, that's it's a drag and a drudge and, you know, we just kind of, here we go again. You know, how am I going to get through the next 8 hours? You know, that's not good, is it, Claudia, when you get into that mind state? Yeah, you want your job, whatever it is, to be a source of joy to you. And it can be, if we bring that to it. And again, when you meet with HR, they're not going to tell you about bringing authenticity and joy to what you do, right? That's not what HR tells us, does it? But again, that's in our spiritual community, that's the message we get. So that our spiritual community nourishes that capacity to even at work to create meaning for ourselves.